call down the thunder. Well, now you've got it.
In the turn three, Paris knocks on the door, looks to the inside. Chris Green hammers car 65 off turn four to take the checkered flag. Mitchell Paris second. Josh Harris, Showtime, Nathan Pearson, Cookie Evans round out your top five.
Satterfield slips as well. Chapel gets loose off the corner. Satterfield goes by. Brandon Satterfield, your main event winner.
Higgins with the lead. Head noses to the inside. He gets to the bumper. Higgins a little sideways. Here comes the cage ring. Kenneth Head, they'll go side by side into turn three. Luke Sorrow looking for room. Heading off turn four. Higgins gets sideways. They touch coming to the line. Oh, my goodness.
He's looking now for the checkered flag, and it is in the air. Dustin Lightning Rod, your winner in Predator 350 over Bradley Gillespie in the four of Ricky Bridgman will round out your top three here in Predator 350. And that will be a wrap on this main event here at Foothills Raceway.
No threat out back yet. Here comes Gray, slips it up high. Robinson will try for it. Into the side he goes. Lee Gray will win. Robinson slides up the track. Everybody scatters as Billy Rushton takes second. Dale Timms third. Jeff Crowder fourth. And the 18 of Justin Sims rounds out the top five.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Dropping the Hammer here on your podcast feeds, recapping the weekend that was Motorsports Christmas. Finally, all three major races for Memorial Day weekend on the same day as they should have been forever ago. But back, Monaco, Indianapolis, Charlotte for the Coke 600. Biggest day for motorsports in the world. And Joey, these races did not disappoint.
Didn't. Obviously, start of the day at Monaco was delayed a little bit because of the track pretty much being underwater.
We could have raced the boats.
Yeah, could have. Qualifying session the day before was interesting to say the least, as the guys who eventually be on the podium at the end of the race were involved in a crash going in the tunnel.
Yeah, it was wild. Indianapolis was really fun to be with and actually be at. I really enjoyed that personally. And then Charlotte was a sight. That was one of the best Charlotte races I've seen in probably 15 years. It was amazing. But before we get to the big three, obviously the support series come first, and we talk about these. We had probably the most ARCA race of the year. That's Charlotte. In about 15 laps, we saw a car crash itself under caution and take someone else out. Someone's dash catch on fire. And
before that, the dash was on fire, yeah.
Like, there was so much going on. Just absolute chaos.
Took them about 20 laps to find out how Daniel Dye's rear bumper got ripped off.
Yeah, I had no idea what happened there, but much like we'll talk about for one of the major three races, the result for the race does not really spell out how chaotic it was. The pole sitter won this race. Brandon Jones dropping down a level, running ARCA.
Being down two levels. Pole.
Two levels, yeah. Starts on pole, wins the race. Took him a late run, had to fight off Raja Carruth and some other guys, but managed to get the job done, and Brandon Jones was the ARCA winner at Charlotte. That moves on. Trucks took center stage Friday night, as they typically do. Joey, this race was fun. Max Gutierrez getting a start in the 37 and just running his way through the field as best he could. Didn't get the results he really wanted. But the real story in this one, Joey, is Carson Hocevar and Ryan Preece.
Yep, Carson Hocevar looked like he was cruising to a win. Then, of course, when that happens, a late caution comes out, screws everything up. And on the restart, Carson Hocevar gets down the corner. Him and Chastain are battling hard. Hocevar hits the apron, spins up the racetrack, collects Preece, and is all she wrote for those two.
Yeah, but for, and as we mentioned, going down a couple levels for Brandon Jones, Ross Chastain doing the same thing, running a truck race, as he does every so often. He did it last week as well. He, interestingly, seemed like he was on seven cylinders. He did not seem like that truck was well, but managed to drive his way through the field, be in the right place at the right time, and as the crash happened, got by them, held off everyone else on the ensuing restart, and Ross Chastain wins a truck race for the 41 team.
It was the bad luck biting Carson Hocevar, but the Nice Motorsports stable still getting a win with Ross Chastain, so not their full-time guy getting the win, but they still got it. Still got it.
Yeah, and we had a fun Xfinity race as well. Junior Motorsports dominating this race, but not in the traditional sense that one of the four cars is on a roll. All of them were good. Mayer was on pole. Noah Gragson led a good portion of the beginning of this race, ended up crashing out later, won a stage. And then that left the 8 and the 7, Barry and Allgaier, to fight out for the win.
Yep. And Josh Berry getting the win. Charlotte, his second win of the year, fourth career win in the Xfinity Series. Junior Motorsports now won four of the last five races. And in that five-race span, they've swept the stages in all five races.
Yeah, they won the last four races straight.
No.
No, wait. Math me. They've won all the stages in the last five races. And won five.
Since Talladega, they swept the stages. The only race they didn't win was
won by a non-full-time driver in Tyler Reddick.
Yeah.
Which, funny enough, Tyler was part of the drivers-only broadcast for this race as well. And someone on Twitter points out, wins Xfinity race, interviewing Xfinity drivers next week. Man, the business is hard. Not even winning can keep you right.
Yeah, he was, yeah, the car he won in, literally the same chassis, same car, everything in Texas, the car he won in crashed. Like, I was going to drive that again in a couple weeks. Now they're going to have to fix it.
Yeah. So that gets all the companion series out of the way. And Joey, this is where we really break down what's going on and everything. Firstly, we will head in the order they happened. Monaco, the Principality. You mentioned before, delayed start because torrential downpours put it was too dangerous to race. It was too rainy. Couldn't really do much of anything.
Personally, I hope the race doesn't get taken off the schedule, but there's been rumors flying around that this could be the last Monaco Grand Prix. At least it might not be on the schedule next year.
We'll see. It's a huge event, but also at the same time, you've got to fight it. It's a huge deal. Everyone wants to win it, but the cars as they currently are very difficult to race at this track in its current state.
Yeah, they're too big to race at this racetrack now.
Yeah. So we go through. You mentioned the qualifying session, and the weird thing was, kind of an inverse of last year. Last season, Charles Leclerc crashed at the end of qualifying, but had already banked the fastest lap. So in doing so, won himself the pole by ending qualifying. Similar thing happened this time. He had the fastest lap. His teammate crashed, along with both Red Bulls, who were second, third, and fourth in qualifying. They end qualifying, hand Charles Leclerc the pole. But that's not where the weirdness stops. The race goes on. Things get so odd. Firstly, Mick Schumacher splits his car in half. And then that turns from virtual safety car to safety car to red flag in a 10-minute window. I didn't know what to do about that, which I don't know why they didn't just go straight red to begin with, but whatever, FIA. But that sets up one of the weirder decisions we've seen out of the Ferrari stable all year. They seemed to be trying to set up the best finish for Sainz, not Leclerc.
Yeah, it was very weird. And at one point in the race, the Ferrari team tried to tell Leclerc to stay out after they had already brought him into pit road.
The pit communication was messed up. Then they tried to help out Sainz to get him a better finish in spite of Leclerc.
And they still ended up... And the Red Bulls still ended up past both of them.
Yeah, well, it ended weird. Verstappen was the slowest of the four all weekend long, so that was the weird part about screwing with Leclerc, because that felt like that was the opportunity to gain points, not do what they ended up doing. That goes forward. They do everything they can, but... You know, it's not the big two, and it's not Carlos Sainz, but it's Sergio Perez who ends up with the victory. And later, he makes a comment as he's walking into the paddock that maybe he signed the contract a little too soon. We find out a couple days later that he had signed his extension. He's with the team through 2025 now, and he just won the Monaco Grand Prix. So, just good
week all around. Seems like a pretty... That seems like a good thing for him.
Very, very good. So, all that said, we move on. Indianapolis, Indiana, you and I finally got to be in attendance for one of these, and it was a sight. The venue's crazy. The racing is just amazing. Of the three races throughout the day, was it the best? No, but the prestige is what it's all about. And... This is a race that was dominated by Dixon and Pillow, and both of them managed to mess their own race up. And that was even before a couple guys getting a little in a little trouble throughout the race. Only five accidents, and four of them were right at the exit of turn two.
Technically, there were six cautions. There was one in the last lap.
Oh, yeah, that's fair.
Stage care.
But point being, it was just pretty straightforward strategy race for the most part,
yeah.
Except for when teams kind of got messed up with the time cautions.
I think the very first caution of the day for Rinus VK really threw off the whole day, honestly, because I felt like Rinus had a... Well, don't feel like I know. He had a car that was capable of winning.
You had a top three car. You did.
Scott Dixon started on the pole. Alex Blow went ahead to turn three. They traded back and forth because well, team play strategy, trying to save more fuel, switch the lead back and forth. In this race, Scott Dixon became the all-time lap leader at the Indy 500.
To go along. Yeah, to go
45 and counting.
Yeah, yeah, and to go along with his five poles and one win in the race, and I mentioned this, if it weren't for his 2009 victory in the Indianapolis 500, we would think he was cursed.
2008.
Yeah, but...
Oh, yeah, 109.
Yeah, you're right. But if not for that 08 victory, he'd be cursed. We'd think he was cursed. Because everything is going his way... Except winning. He should probably have had three or four of these by now.
Yeah, what we're seeing is what I feel like NASCAR fans felt with Dale Sr. for so long.
Yeah, Dale Sr. at Daytona is what Scott Dixon at Indianapolis is like.
But like
he can win everything but the race, it feels like.
He's dominating in the very last pit stop of the day. If got a little hot coming off turn four. Didn't get the car down to 60 miles per hour. And that was it from there. But rewind earlier in the race, Alex Palou got caught. A caution came out as he was already committed to pit road. So that screwed his race up. But sucks for those two. The end of the day, Chip Ganassi still got the win. Marcus Ericsson.
And four different drivers led the race for them.
Including Jimmy Johnson himself.
Yeah, Jimmy threw a strategy play. But that also means that Jimmy has led the Daytona 500, the Coke 600, the Southern 500, the Indianapolis 500, the 24 Hours of Daytona, Petit Le Mans. Like, he's done the 12 Hours of Sebring. He has led all of these races. That's incredible. Congrats to Marcus Ericsson on getting the win. Pato O'Ward, very good. Very good run. Just not quite enough. But really cool to see an XF1 driver get into victory lane, take his chance away from the international side and just show up, be in the right spot, and become a motorsports legend. He will forever be an Indianapolis 500 winner.
Yeah. People never really understand how grueling and demanding this race is. It's like, you know, your average IndyCar race probably has at most four pit stops, but this one you're running eight.
Yeah. It's crazy, but they managed to get their job done. They did everything they could. And I really enjoyed it. And also, Connor Daly, for the second year in a row, took the lead in this race. Like, we haven't had anyone... Since the year 2000, we've had three Americans win this race. The last time we won... the last time a guy from Indiana won the race was back in the... I believe it was the 20s or 30s. It was a long time. Like, it's rare for an American to win it because there's so many international drivers that are very good and competing in this, but then even rarer to have someone from Indiana with a legitimate shot to win the race. So very happy to see what that became, how that all went, and I really enjoyed the race. But Joey, let's move on to the chaos.
It was the Coca-Cola 600, the 63rd annual running of the race.
Yeah, it was interesting. From start to finish, we had good feelings about this race, but I don't think we thought it was going to be as good as it was.
Yes, and as you said, this further proves how much worse Texas
is.
So Jamie McMurray pointed out that throughout the entire weekend, people were pointing out this is the way Charlotte's supposed to run. This way it was running in the mid-2000s.
It's what Boyer said. It's what Jamie Mack said. It's what Larry McReynolds said. This is what we remember from Charlotte. This was Gen 4 Charlotte. This is what this looked like.
And boy, did it put on a show.
Good Lord. And for the second consecutive race on a mile and a half points paying, Toyotas looked dominant early.
Yep. Denny Hamlin got the pole. Didn't really lead a lot of laps, but spoiler alert, he was there at the end. There's just so much to go around in this race. The fact that Kevin Harvick somehow managed, I think, at least a top 10, maybe a top 5. I don't remember the finishing order. The battle at the end between Chase Briscoe and Kyle Larson, and not to mention Kyle Larson's crazy day itself.
Yeah, Larson, in the first half of this race, said this was the worst race of his career. No, not of his career, of his life. His NASCAR days.
Yeah. His crew chief, Cliff Daniels, had probably the best Commander Chief speech I've ever heard.
He sounded like he gave his Remember the Titans speech, is what I think I said to you, and it was crazy. We saw, just going back and forth, Toyota's dominating, but even Larson, who had three different pit road penalties, the car was on fire, he spun himself out twice, was still in contention. How long this race is. But
I enjoy it. The longer the race, usually the better it is.
I would argue, yeah. And we saw some cool stuff happen throughout this race. Daniel Suarez took the lead in this race, so that meant that a Mexican driver led all three races.
Yeah.
During the day. And Suarez looked really good throughout the day.
I think the only gripe people have about this race was the safety crew taking too much time to flip Chris Buescher over.
And we'll get to that in a bit. But just all these guys contesting this race. Suarez, Briscoe, Chastain, Hamlin, Busch, Wallace, everybody, Larson, looked like they were great at different points throughout this race. Cendric ended up crashing himself out. Trackhouse got a 1-2 in a stage. There was a big one for some reason. Still don't know how that happened. Two different teams made a stupid mistake, or very similar stupid mistakes. The 9 team forgot they were still on the damage vehicle policy clock from the previous accident and then let it expire trying to fix the damage. And then the 23 team did not put on new tires after this spin. They were collecting the accident on the damaged vehicle policy. Not a lot of damage. But there's a caveat within the rule that says you have to hit minimum speed within 3 laps. Not counting the restart lap, obviously, but 3 laps of racing. You have to hit it. And there were exactly 3 laps to the end of that stage. And he did not do it, so the 23 was out. And this is all before midway.
Yeah.
And not even to mention, Suarez went from the lead to last to the lead in half the race. It was amazing.
The battle at the end obviously didn't work out for either of them at the conclusion, but the battle at the end between Briscoe and Larson reminded me of the famous Jimmy Johnson, Bobby Labonte Coke 600 battle at the end of 05.
That's what it felt like. And as for that Cliff Daniels speech, here's the transcript. At halfway. In the first half, all I want you to remember is how good TV we made. We went from the back to the front more times than I can count. We hit the wall. We spun out. We literally caught on fire. We were also the most penalized team on pit road in the first half. All that means is that in the second half, already we're going to be starting way better than what we've started in the first half. We've got to execute right now, so I don't know what the hell you're worried about, but I'm fine. The team's fine. Everybody down here is nodding their heads and giving a thumbs up. Let's go.
It sounded like an old Chad Knaus speech.
It's exactly what it was. He took cues from Chad Knaus and what he did for Jimmy Johnson, and that literally could prove to be, I don't think this duo ends up with 7 championships, honestly, but proved to be championship caliber winning for that team for the long time. You're going to remember that.
Yeah, there's always that, obviously the driver takes center stage itself, duh, but crew chiefs do matter. Think about the years Tony Stewart and Scott Cipadelli were together.
There are a few crew chiefs you know the name of.
Think about Jeff Gordon or Ray Evernham.
Exactly. You know about Ray Evernham, Chad Knaus.
Fatback McSwain. Bobby Labonte.
Well, I love Fatback, but that just, the point being, like, these championship crew chiefs that managed to do everything they could for these teams. It was huge. So finally into the final stage of this race, as this race went on forever, it felt like it was over 5 hours long. Firstly, Tyler Reddick still has no luck. Manages to somehow crash out consistently. Even when he has the best car. But, Joey, you mentioned it earlier. The bizarre part of this race, Chris Buescher flipping. We haven't seen a non-super speedway flip since the 00 flipped at Watkins Glen over 10 years ago. We haven't seen a mile and a half flip since Brad Keselowski at Atlanta. That's how rare this is. And it was a weird situation. The left front A-frame broke off, pogoed the car in the air, and the 17 landed upside down. Chris Buescher just unfortunately landing under there. And, Joe, you mentioned it. The problem we've had and the problem I still have is that it took them almost 7 minutes to flip this car over.
Yeah, and you go back earlier in the weekend to Colton Herta's carb day accident in Indianapolis where he flipped. It took them less than 2 minutes to flip it over.
It took them a minute 37 from the time the car flipped over to flipping it back over. And that counts the time it took for the vehicle to get there in the first place. But Buescher was okay, and things went well, all things considered. But, Joey, just like the Bristol Dirt Race, we had something similar happening this time. Kyle Larson led this race with 20 to go, fading. Chase Briscoe charging. Side-by-side with 4 to go, and much like Bristol, Briscoe spins himself out, going for the lead. Kid has speed. He can win. Just don't spin the car out. At the very least, give yourself a chance to finish second. Just do it.
I'm pretty sure Tony's probably had some calls with him this week about that. But
yeah, he should.
Tony understands. I mean, there were times early in Tony's career where, I mean, obviously, Tony's one of the best rookies of all time. You win 3 races in a rookie season, that's literally only been done twice.
Yeah, and the other one's a 7-time champion.
So.
Yeah,
Chase will get his wins piled up. But he's got to keep the car underneath him. He's got to, as you said, give himself a shot to finish second. The wind's there, he could take it. But at the end of the day, you want to maximize your points so you're not sitting outside the cut line.
But luckily, he has a win and he can't afford to do it. But he held so much composure at Phoenix. Take a step back to what you were there that day, and he'd probably have 3 wins. But that late yellow sets up a green-white checker. We end up doing 2 of these because
Austin Dillon
the first time. Austin Dillon on 4 tires.
Being an idiot, as he always is.
Well, he managed to make a 3-wide run, and honestly, can you blame him? He's going for a crown jewel win. He has won this race before, but I think it'd be funny if you got one of them on fuel strategy and one of them on tire strategy.
Yeah. He won Texas 2 years ago.
Yeah, that is how he won Texas. It's an interesting finish. We tried to go 4 wide off of 4. It was never going to work, but the 11 snuck through, the 4 snuck through. You watch this replay and you're like, how did these people avoid this wreck? But Briscoe got up to 4th, Bell 5th, Reddick 6th, Larson 9th, even throughout all this. And mind you that Larson had to pit after that accident. Managed to get a top 10 after everything that happened to him. Denny Hamlin able to make a last lap pass on Kyle Busch. 2 guys that started at the front, faded for about 395 laps, and then showed their way right at the very end to earn a 1-2 finish. Kevin Harvick somehow getting a third. Briscoe, we mentioned, even after the wreck, finished fourth. And Stenhouse, give kudos to this. Ricky Stenhouse finished in the top 10 for his fourth race in a row.
I think with the way things are going with him, who knows? He might just be able to sneak in on points to the playoffs, but obviously winning would solve that. So, and he's looked like he's had a car capable of winning at some places.
Yeah, he has. And then you see some of these other things that happened. I think two of the crazier things were coming to the checkered flag, Tyler Reddick passed five cars in the grass. He made up five positions in about 100 feet. Also, the double overtime made this the longest 600-mile race, the longest Coke 600 of all time, 619 and a half miles. And, Joey, you already know my favorite graphic that showed up was Ty Dillon right coming to the final restart. Was the only car on the lead lap that did not have an issue. The only one. And then past that, Joey, just some crazy other stuff. Christopher Bell on the final restart went from 15th to 5th, 5 wide in turn 1. Goes to 15th to 5th. He went 5 wide in turn 1, got to 8th at the white, goes 3 wide in the backstretch, passes the 47 as he's fading, finished 5th. In 10 positions on a restart, just going crazy. You have to love what that means for that. That's amazing.
Yeah. Broke his out this weekend. Honestly.
And then also found out earlier this week on the Cup side, Christopher Bell, after the flip, tested positive for COVID, and now Zane Smith is going to be running the 17 Cup car for Brad Keselowski and RFK at Gateway. Also pointing this one out, Denny Hamlin's won at the Coke 600, is the 48th of his career. Also, that completes all the crown jewels. He has all four now. Well, he has all three. Brickyard 400, no longer a crown jewel in many people's eyes. I would count the Bristol Night Race as the fourth, but if we say for the official ones that still exist, the three that exist, he now has all three.
Yeah.
Three Daytona 500s, three Southern 500s, and a Coke 600.
Yep. Going back to the IndyCar thing real quick, as I said, Kyle Mylott's out this week. Santino Ferrucci is filling in his seat. And another thing, this be the last Detroit Grand Prix at Belle Isle because they're moving the race to downtown on the streets next year.
Yes, they are.
But and Felix Rosenquist's first trip back here since his crash last year that had him sit out, forced him to sit out for a while.
Yeah, and back to the Denny Hamlin thing I was trying to finish up on. Denny Hamlin, You're fine. That win at the Coke 600 is his 48th. He is one away from tying Tony Stewart at 49. I know we're at Gateway this week, but Joey, where did Tony win that 49th?
Sonoma.
You know who finished second in that race?
Hamlin.
You know where we're going next week?
So Sonoma with Tony Stewart in the booth.
There you go.
So you feel like it's meant to be, huh?
I feel like it's possible. I think it'd be really funny.
I totally enjoy that.
Yeah, and thoughts from Kyle Busch. Quote, I think just being able to have some diversity in the schedule, being able to go to different places and have different tracks is a good thing. Maybe getting some new fans out to the track or turning on the TV with some of the new places and new markets is definitely a positive for our sport.
And I agree with him there. And Kyle also said something like, his experience from being in the Xfinity or winning the Xfinity race there 2009 doesn't really translate to 13 years later.
Yeah, he's right. also pointing out, we mentioned previously, Elliott, Byron, and Larson all getting starts for Junior Motorsports. How about now Bowman, Byron, and Larson getting starts in Xfinity? The Hendrick 17 making the comeback.
Yep. Hendrick Motorsports returning to the Xfinity Series, first time since 2009. Be interesting, you know. Obviously, interesting to see the big teams trying to dive back into the lower series. I kind of like it. You know, some of the smaller teams won't, but it'll give them more competition. Eventually, I feel like Brad Keselowski might dive back into the Truck Series with RFK.
Yeah, we may see that here in the future, and I would, for one, welcome that. But I'm just excited. I'm excited to see what everything's going to happen, how things are going to play out. I'm very happy. This weekend, as you mentioned, IndyCar at Belle Isle. Trucks and Cup are at Gateway. Xfinity's at Portland on the road course in Oregon. Excited to see how that one's going to turn out. It's going to be a weird race, to be honest with you.
It sucks that Mid Ohio is not on the Xfinity schedule this year because it would be this week traditionally. But I'm also excited for the new track,
I like seeing Portland. I think it's fun. So we'll see. And just mixing it up. I like mixing it up and going to different places.
I'd like to have more of a rotating schedule of tracks, you know?
That would be very nice. Well, honestly, I'd like to see staples throughout, like tent poles, like your Daytona 500s, your Coke 600s, your Bristol night races, things like that that don't change. And then if we could just, instead of adding, and I think this is what the front office is doing, instead of going like 10, 15 year contracts with these places, make it 3, 4, and then stagger those. So every year we have a chance that some don't get renewed and are replaced with some other ones. I think that would be the way to go.
Because I'd like to see the Xfinity Series back in Montreal. I'd like to see them back in Mexico City. IRP is another one. The trucks are going back there this year. I'm excited for that.
You mean LOIRP?
Yeah, Lucas Oil Indianapolis Raceway Park. Changed the name of the track again.
Good old lawyer. But yeah, that's all we have for this week. And I know it was a lot, but this past weekend was really fun. And I'm really hoping to see if the weather holds out in Portland, a dry Xfinity race, if not a chaotic wet one. We'll see. Excited to see the Cup cars on a new track. We don't get that as often as we should. But let's just have a little fun with it. So, you have any last thoughts?
I'm good.
All right, so that's been another episode of Dropping the Hammer here on your podcast feeds, as they normally are. We'll catch you next week.
Building. Thank you and good night.